You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Burning questions.
Insightful answers.
Listener's Choice.
With Clement Maniatella.
Time for our Listener's Choice feature now. And Listener's Choice is an opportunity for you to curate the content of the show with us. And you send me an email on cm@702.co.za if there's something you want us to focus on, if there's something you want to understand more, you want us to bring an expert or someone who understands the issue better to discuss the issue, we'll do that. We got an email from a listener who's asked that we talk about strikes. What happens when workers go on strike? We understand that the Constitution provides all workers with labor rights, including that right to strike. But the reality is most companies have a no work, no pay policy, right? So do workers get paid by unions during a strike, and how much? I know there are some unions that have a fund that's been created to cater for that. Who contribute towards that fund? And what happens to union leaders? Do they get their normal salaries when workers are not during a strike? And I've often wondered what happens with the employers themselves, right? So when you are back at work and there's more workload after that strike, can the employer, for instance, increase your working hours to catch up on the work itself? We've got someone who will help us understand these issues better. But also, if you've got some questions around how strikes work, you're welcome to give us a call on 011-883-0702. You can send us a WhatsApp voice note on 072-702-1702. Tony Endrenrich is a parliamentary officer at COSATU and joins us on the line. Tony, thank you so much for making time. Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's maybe start with how we define a strike. I know often there are people who will say they are picketing. Sometimes we hear of strikes that are protected, strikes that are not protected. What's the difference?
Well, I think we should start at the first point, which is the fact that one of the few weapons that workers have to defend their interest in workplaces and in the society is to take strike action to withhold their labor. In South Africa, that process of withholding labor is preceded by a legal process that has to be followed. So you negotiate, you declare dispute, there's an attempt to mediate it. If it's not resolved, you give notice that you're going to be taking protest or strike action, and then you proceed with a strike action. And that would be a protected strike. Those workers would not be able to be fired. But in some instances, employees can employ other workers in their stead, depending on who initiated the strike. So there's a lengthy legal process. But the point to be made is that strikes and the right to strike is enshrined in the Constitution, and there's in the Labor Relations Act the processes that give effect to that. So whether it's picketing, full-blown strike, protest, marches, all of that falls under the general parameters in the strike definition of withholding your labor. But again, that's the only weapon that workers have to defend themselves and to increase their position. Because we should understand that wage negotiations are one of the few ways in which redistribution takes place in society, from those who are wealthy, stinking rich, to those who often work in abject poverty in their workplaces. And so the splitting of the surplus value that's created must be more equally distributed between those who are involved in manufacturing those products and creating that surplus.
So how do you balance, one, this is the most powerful weapon I have to negotiate with the company, but also balance that with what could be the consequences, because most of the companies have this no work, no pay policy. So yes, I want to get a better salary increase, but I'm also concerned that if I'm off work for a month during the strike, that's also going to affect my pocket.
Well, you're absolutely right that striking is not easy. It has an immense cost to workers. And so it's not the first choice that workers make, and it's not a lightly taken decision. But if you have no other option to defend your job security or your income that you feed your family from, then of course you've got to consider drastic action. In South Africa, we can look at examples of why workers have gone on strike. The public servants, they had a 3-year agreement with government. government just reneged on the last year of that three-year agreement and did not honor the agreement to give workers the wages. And so clearly, in the context where parliamentarians are given increases, I think around 3%, but public servants who do the actual work in hospitals and police stations and schools, they don't get an increase and they are largely disregarded and undermined in their negotiating process. So what's going to follow? Of course, strike action is going to follow, both because the negotiations were badly managed, government has shown no regard for the workers, and so there will be strike action. The same with the trucks. The ministry and the government could not address the problems that workers have in relation to foreign workers coming in and taking the jobs that they are eligible for. And so, of course, if the government officials and the departments are not reacting to it, and many unscrupulous employers continue to employ foreign workers in the face of the local workers losing their jobs, then you're going to see the kind of protest action when workers have no options.
Yeah.
So in many cases, it's the tardiness, the ineffectiveness, and sometimes the incompetence of government and the leaders of those institutions to manage it effectively, to come to solutions that guarantees a fair labor environment, but also industrial peace. So again, I say that the right to strike is an important tool to ensure that that process is both taken seriously and that there's pressure on both of the parties to settle. Mm. For the workers, the wages that they lose, and for the employers, the profits that they lose. So hopefully that drives them to a more considered conversation and to solution sooner than later.
How is that decision taken that, okay, we are now going on strike? I know previously there were some unions that were against calls for a secret ballot before going on a strike. Is that what's expected, that balloting, or do the union leaders use their discretion and say, okay, this is the time now to take it a notch up and go on strike?
Well, I think we must dispel the one myth immediately. There's no union officials that can take a decision to strike. The strike is always decided upon by the workers in that industry involved in that strike. So they're the central drivers on the decisions to go on strike, to continue the strike, or to end the strike. The union official's job is to manage, execute, and ensure that all the legal requirements are complied with so that those workers in their strike action are protected, and to make sure that they've assessed the industry, looked into the financial reports, looked at the wealth of the health of that general sector of the economy. So that's the job that the union official must do. His job is not to decide whether the strike continues or not. One of the weaknesses at the moment in unions that we have to attend to urgently is the need for a strike fund so that workers have some income whilst they are on strike, because the bills don't stop coming. The children must be fed, school fees must be paid. So there's got to be some fund put aside. And that's something that the better unions are working towards implementation. And I can only say that it's the weaker unions that are not doing that. Often it's those unions whose leadership have been found to be involved in corruption. And so there's got to be a shake-up in the union.
Okay.
Not around the systemic operation, but around some of the conduct of individuals.
Okay, just to clarify though, so balloting is not expected before a decision to strike can be taken collectively by the workers?
No, balloting is absolutely the best practice in many of the unions, because how else do workers exercise their right to take the decision whether the strike continues or not? So balloting is an important tool. Whether balloting can lead to a strike being declared illegally because maybe the balloting hadn't followed the exact procedures, that unions are concerned about, because employers use those technicalities to undermine a strike.
Oh.
But the terms of enforcing a democratic decision around the strike is greatly enhanced by taking a ballot, and so Cusato and other unions encourage ballots before strike.
Is there a fund? Let's speak, because you are a parliamentary officer at COSATU. Your unions that fall under the federation, do they have a fund that at least has been created that helps workers with a little bit of, you know, some money so that they can at least have something to eat? Because when you are on strike, as we have indicated, there are some companies that have a no work, no pay policy. So sometimes workers can get paid by the unions. during the strike, not their usual normal salary, but they can be given something. COSATU unions, do they have that fund in existence?
I understand the question, but just to again make absolutely clear that all strikes are no work, no pay. Mm. So when you go on strike to fight for a principle or wages or for future equality in the workplace, it's a sacrifice that that worker is making by losing that pay to ensure that the workplace becomes a better place, not only for him, but also for subsequent workers. And that's the principle of solidarity. So that firstly is this notion of the strike fund. Mm. It's unfortunate that whilst COSATU has a position to set up a strike fund, the mechanics thereof is not yet finalized and in place. But notwithstanding that, there are often instances where unions are able to mobilize amongst COSATU members for solidarity support for particular strikes. So there is support for some strikes, but it should be a lot more organized, a lot more structured, closer to the income that was losing during that strike. And that is a big part of the union's work going forward. And as I said before, some of the better organized unions some of those who are not as well organized that don't have strike funds.
Okay, cool. I'm going to ask you to move around a little bit. I think we were losing you there. You've spoken about the sacrifices that workers make, right? When they're deciding to go on strike, that's a sacrifice they're making because they're not going to get their salaries. And sometimes the strikes go on for too long. Recently, at Sibanye-Stillwater, that strike ended it probably took about 3 months. And experts are now saying that it's going to take those workers years to recoup the more than 1.2 billion rand that they forfeited through wages during the strike. So if workers are taking that sacrifice, what is the sacrifice that union leaders are taking? Do they continue receiving their normal salaries when workers are on strike and not getting paid?
Well, I think that the union leadership, those officials, as I've said earlier, they do a job to make sure that they're on the strike line, that they're going court, that they're doing the things. And often a union leader has 10 or 20 companies. So imagine with each one of that companies not working, going on strike that year, and if they're on strike for 2 weeks, you could have a whole year without it being paid. So the whole point about raising this issue about union officials not being paid is a non-issue, because the workers themselves understand that the union official has got to continue working and he's got to continue being on the job. And if all the companies went on strike, he would effectively get no pay. So that call for union leaders to not be paid, union officials who are full-time employees of the union, is just by those elements in the society who try various means to undermine the legitimacy, the sacrifices, and the credibility of these kinds of solidarity action to make the society better. On your point about the Sibanye-Stillwater strike, an important one, it was a long strike. Imagine those hardships on the workers. But look at the facts that led to that. A CEO that gets hundreds of millions of rands a year, a mining house that as a result of the commodity fluctuations has seen the last 2 years of really exceptional profits. So the money is there. The final settlement of the strike was a lot closer to what the workers want. But it's the attitude of the owners of capital in South Africa that still show a complete disregard to dealing with the apartheid wage gap and confronting the issues that must be addressed by collective bargaining and wage negotiation. But just look at the logic besides just the sector that's on strike. If we didn't have protest action around the policies within the society, let's say COSATU take strike action to force all government departments to buy products locally, that means that the demand for local products increases, the workers who manufacture that products have more jobs, the economy is boosted by that, investor confidence is promoted. So all of those things have a positive effect on the macro economy. So those workers taking the action against Stillwater, Sibanye, they're taking a blow both to change the architecture of how the economy is structured in South Africa. And the unfortunate reality of South Africa is, if one looks at the Reserve Bank's own report, is that the levels of inequality has increased in South Africa since 1994. That must be the clearest indication that public policy is failing. But whilst workers have got poorer, the rich have gotten even richer. And so we're unable to deal with the fundamental fault lines in the South African society, which was the basis of the unions. When we adopted the Freedom Charter, the Liberation Promise spoke about the fact that the wealth will be shared amongst all of its people. The wealth is now going to the politically connected who are in government and senior positions, and the old thieves who stole our economy under apartheid. And there's no attempt to redress that in a matter that's equitable and fair and build a different structure. So the issues are both about what happens at the workplace, but it's also the effect on the macroeconomy. And that's what's important to understand, the solidarity of workers to achieve that.
Yeah, and we'll get to the employer shortly, because it's not just the employees that are being affected. You know, the impact is also on just lost production and how that's costing the economy. There's a listener here who's asking about the fund. And he's asking, says, can you please ask Tony, when did COSATU unions take the decision to create the fund that would assist employees during a strike? And why hasn't that been implemented?
There was a decision taken at the bargaining conference of COSATU a few years ago. I can go and check the correct dates, but you'll probably get it on our website, where the leadership was tasked to work towards setting up the strike fund. That's both at the level of the federation, but also at the level of the actual unions who manage the strikes in many instances. And as I've said before, some unions have done that. I know, for example, the South African Clothing and Textile Workers Union has a very effective strike fund that does step in to assist workers in certain defined instances. We need that in all of the unions. And so what we've got to look at is to make sure that COSATU is much more influential in directing the unions to put in place the systemic framework that's more supportive of workers both during the strike, but also the servicing that workers need on an ongoing basis and the defense of their jobs, while it creates opportunities of enhanced skills and better productivity levels. So the demands that union puts in place benefits the entire economy, except a few bosses and their political cronies in government who's already drank from the corrupt chalices and who don't want to change to do the right thing in South Africa.
So what happens then? So if workers are not being paid their salaries, do employers pay for the benefits like pension and medical aid?
Employers pay for nothing. Remember, the employers, when there's a strike, they don't see it as a competition about who gets what part of the surplus profits that are created. They see it as an attempt to destroy the union. So there's no wages that goes to workers. There's no money paid into their medical aid and pensions. Often if they're ill during the time of the strike action, they can't take their family to the health facilities under their medical aid provisions. So the employer is going to war mode against workers. Mm. And that's the kind of attitude that must be addressed. It's about withholding labor to resolve the dispute about who gets what part of the profits. But the employers have shown, as they have now with Sibanye-Stillwater and the state by reneging on a wage agreement, that all they want is to maximize profits, ensure that those at the top get added payments and added bonuses for productivity and other issues, but with no real regard for the workers. And that's what we've got to change in South Africa, that attitude towards industrial relations that's largely fueled by an old apartheid mentality that we have not been able to undo.
All right, Tony Andrendrech, thank you so much for making time. Tony is a parliamentary officer at COSATU.